Morning. Good to see you all. Always glad to have the chance to do this. If you'd like to go ahead and turn to 1 Kings chapter 3. 1 Kings chapter 3, we'll begin there, and then the rest of the sermon will be from Ecclesiastes. Anytime I'm getting ready to preach, it seems, at least every other time or so, I consider maybe I should talk about the book of Ecclesiastes. And then I'll think, no, it hadn't been too long since I've done that. Well, before you know, years go by, and I realize, well, actually, it's been a really long time since I've talked about that, so maybe I should. So that's what we'll be talking about this morning. And one of the reasons, somewhat of a side note, but probably, hopefully relevant for all of us, one of the reasons I keep coming back to the book of Ecclesiastes is I always, not that there's any book that I've mastered and just figured out everything in it, but Ecclesiastes is one of those that I always feel like there's just something right around the corner. There's just some missing piece that if I could figure that out, then the rest of the book of Ecclesiastes would make sense. It's not that it doesn't make sense, there's just, I have so many questions about it. For example, you know, a lot of the things that Solomon concludes throughout, very pessimistic. And it's kind of hard to tell, like, and then we all know the end conclusion, and no surprise, but that's going to be towards the end of this sermon about fear God and keep his commandments. And so then the question is, well, all those very pessimistic conclusions, are they just kind of like vain, facetious things, and the real conclusion is the one at the end? Or are those pessimistic conclusions real, and it's just the one at the end about fearing God and his commandments is the greatest one of all? So that's one of the open questions for me. So if anyone has that figured out, let me know. But there's just a lot of things within the book of Ecclesiastes that I just keep coming back to, and so that's what we'll be doing this morning. But before we get to that, I want us to make sure we understand the context of Solomon early on in his reign. It's a story we've all heard more than once, but I think it's very important to keep this in mind as we read some of the passages we'll be in for the book of Ecclesiastes. So let's read the first 15 verses of 1 Kings chapter 3. Solomon made a marriage alliance with Pharaoh, king of Egypt. He took Pharaoh's daughter and brought her into the house of David until he finished building his own house, in the house of the Lord, in the wall around Jerusalem. The people were sacrificing at the high places, however, because no house had yet been built for the name of the Lord. Solomon loved the Lord, walking in the statutes of David his father, only he sacrificed and made offerings at the high places. And the king went to Gibeon to sacrifice there, for that was the great high place. Solomon used to offer 1,000 burnt offerings on that altar. At Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night, and God said, "Ask what I shall give you." And Solomon said, "You have shown great and steadfast love to your servant David, my father, because he walked before you in faithfulness, in righteousness, and in uprightness of heart toward you. And you have kept for him this great and steadfast love, and have given him a son to sit on his throne this day. And now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant king in place of David, my father, although I am but a little child. I do not know how to go out or come in. And your servant is in the midst of your people whom you have chosen, a great people, too many to be numbered or counted for multitude. Give your servant, therefore, an understanding mind to govern your people, that I may discern between good and evil. For who is able to govern this, your great people?" It pleased the Lord that Solomon asked this. And God said to him, "Because you have asked this, and have not asked for yourself long life, or riches, or the life of your enemies, but have asked for yourself understanding to discern what is right, behold, I now do according to your word. Behold, I give you a wise and discerning mind, so that none like you has been before you, and none like you shall arise after you. I give you also what you have not asked, both riches and honor, so that no other king shall compare with you all your days. And if you will walk in my ways, keeping my statutes and my commandments, as your father David walked, then I will lengthen your days." And Solomon awoke, and behold, it was a dream. Then he came to Jerusalem and stood before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord and offered up burnt offerings and peace offerings and made a feast for all his servants. Now we're all familiar with this. This is where Solomon obtains the great wisdom for which he's noted. And there's a couple of things I want to make note of here before we go over to the book of Ecclesiastes. The first of which is, I mean, keep in mind, he had to have had a decent amount of wisdom already if he thought to ask for that. And God knew that as well, because he says, you didn't ask for these other things, the things that will be very typical for a king to ask for, Solomon was at least wise enough to ask for the right thing. And so that's something that we should keep in mind, that wisdom is not knowing something. Wisdom is not this wealth of knowledge. Wisdom sometimes is just knowing the right question to ask. That's what Solomon did. He knew the right question to ask. Would you give me this? Give me wisdom. So that's part of what wisdom is knowing the right thing to ask for. But secondly, I want to point something out. Whenever God is answering him, he says, because you've asked this and not for long life, for riches, and tells him what all he's going to get, he says, I'll give you a wise and discerning mind, like none that have been before you and none that will come after you. But I want us to note something there, verse 14. He says, and if you will walk in my ways, keeping my statutes and my commandments, as your father David walked, and I will lengthen your days. See, the wisdom does not just assume that he's going to continue walking in God's path. I mean, despite the fact that he was going to be the most wise and discerning person on the face of the earth ever, he was still told, if you walk in my ways. He was given the same condition as everyone. Just think about that. The wisest man on the face of the earth was given the same condition by God as all of us, as all the people of Israel, as every king before him and every king after him. Because that's a common one, right? God reminds them many times over, if you will walk in my way, I will do this for you. And so this is the terms in which Solomon, I mean, his reign has already begun, but the peak of his reign and building the temple and all of these things, this is where he begins, being the most wise man on the face of the earth, being given great riches, being given great power, and being reminded that you still have to follow me if you want to receive this blessing of having a long life and a long reign. So now let's turn over to the book of Ecclesiastes. The book of Ecclesiastes, we'll begin reading in verse 12 here in just a minute. And before we begin reading this, I just have to ask the question, what does the most wise man on the face of the earth, what would he pursue? What would he do? Where do you go from there? And he's already been told great riches, great power, great honor. What do you do with that? We'll see what Solomon has chosen to do with that, beginning in verse 12. I've broken this up into two categories. The first one, he continues to pursue even more wisdom and even more knowledge. Verse 12, I, the preacher, have been king over Israel and Jerusalem, and I have applied my heart to seek and to search out by wisdom all that is done under heaven. It is an unhappy business that God has given to the children of man to be busy with. Let me pause for a second. That's the kind of stuff I'm talking about. That's a very pessimistic statement. It's an unhappy business that God has given to the children of man. I have seen everything that is done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and a striving after wind. What is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be counted. I said in my heart, I have acquired great wisdom, surpassing all who were over Jerusalem before me. And my heart has had great experience of wisdom and knowledge, and applied my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceive that this also is but a striving after wind. For in much wisdom is much vexation, and he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. One concept that constantly recurs in the book of Exodus, we'll talk about that later, Ecclesiastes, is this vanity, striving after wind. And when we think of vanity, I think we usually think of, you know, it's being completely useless, or this prideful thing, or this thing that's just done for the show of it. And actually, I don't know how I've never caught this, but I looked at some of the footnotes in my Bible, and it really caught my eye, and I started researching it and found, whoa, that's interesting. So this concept of vanity says the Hebrew word translated vanity or vain refers concretely to a mist, vapor, or mere breath. So when he's saying vanity, a lot of what he means, I mean, there is that element that I've talked about, this kind of this pride and uselessness, but really the gist of what he's saying is everything's temporary. All of this is temporary. Striving after the wind, that's a temporary thing. And so what he's talking about, I mean, it's still a very sobering concept, but again, it's more than just this is useless or you shouldn't go after this or this is prideful. That's not really all that he's saying. I would say really the reverse of what I've often thought. That's probably like secondary. The primary thing he's saying is all this is temporary. The passage in James that talks about life is but a vapor, That's basically what Solomon is saying. Life is but a vapor. Everything is temporary. Everything is but a vapor. Everything is just a breath. So keep that in mind as with the things that I just read and some of the things that we'll read. I probably should have called that out before I read, but forgot until I was reading it. But look at what he's saying here. He's saying that even the pursuit of knowledge and the pursuit of greater wisdom, and interesting, the pursuit of madness, right? I mean, you may have seen or heard of that before. Sometimes people just get so intelligent, so wrapped up, that just normal thought processes are no longer enough for them. And they kind of just start to break down. That's kind of what Solomon's pursuing here, to see, can I find meaning in this? And so this is the beginning of his exploration. This wisest man on the face of the earth is looking for what? More wisdom and more knowledge. Let's see what he concludes here. Then he says, "In much wisdom is much vexation, and he who increases knowledge increases sorrow." So he ultimately concludes, it's not a satisfying pursuit, looking for more wisdom and more knowledge. We'll talk about some greater applications later, but think about this one for now. That the pursuit, that much wisdom brings vexation, and more knowledge increases sorrow. Now, it doesn't mean just be dumb, be ignorant, don't look after anything, but Solomon is basically saying, I've done this. I've pursued that, and there's no satisfaction in it. We'll get to the most famous thing he pursued after, a great honor and building things and wives and concubines, but all of that stuff kind of, we'll talk about it, but on the surface, you're like, okay, that's wrong. You don't pursue that. But your natural inclination may think, well, wisdom and knowledge, that's a good thing to pursue. Well, Solomon's saying it's pointless. It brings sorrow. It brings vexation. We'll talk and elaborate on that a little bit more later, because the point is, it's not entirely pointless to pursue wisdom and knowledge, but it has to be in perspective. That's not all there is to it. Just pursuing wisdom and knowledge for the sake of it will not bring satisfaction. Now let's continue on, chapter 2, verse 1 through 11, what we see on his second phase of this exploration. It says, I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure. Enjoy yourself. But behold, this also is vanity. I said of laughter, it is mad. And of pleasure, what use is it? I searched with my heart how to cheer my body with wine, my heart still guiding me with wisdom. And I laid hold on folly, till I might see what was good for the children of man to do under heaven during the few days of their life. I made great works. I built houses and planted vineyards for myself. I made for myself gardens and parks and planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made myself pools with which to water the forest of growing trees. I brought male and female slaves and had slaves who were born in my house. I also had possessions, great possessions of herds and flocks, more than any who had gone before me in Jerusalem. I also gathered for myself silver and gold and treasure of kings and provinces. I got singers, both men and women, and many concubines, the delights of the sons of man. So I became great and surpassed all who were before me in Jerusalem, and also my wisdom remained with me. And whatever my eye desired, I did not keep from them. I kept from my heart no pleasure, for my heart found pleasure in all my toil, and this was my reward for all my toil. Then I considered all that my hands had done, and the toil I had expended in doing it, and behold, all was vanity and a striving after wind, and there was nothing to be gained under the sun. So now he turns to pleasure and to work, to things that would bring him prestige. And I would remind us of the same question. Why does the wisest man on the face of the earth, the man with the greatest understanding, what's he looking for? What's he after? What's there to still search for at that point? I mean, and look at the nature of his question. In verse 3, he says, till I might see what was good for the children of man to do under heaven during the few days of their life. You see, this wisest man on earth is still struggling with the most basic and fundamental question of all. Why are we here? What are we supposed to be doing? How do we spend our time? And the wisest man applied it to the wrong things. He says, well, hey, we're going to try. I forgot to bring the list with me. I'd written down a list of all this stuff. I mean, look at it. Wine, parks, gardens, trees, pools, slaves, concubines, singers, silver, gold, great toil that would bring him prestige and reputation. Everything anyone could physically dream of, he pursued it all. And he says that. He said, I didn't withhold myself from anything. I pursued all of it. And what did he conclude? It's empty. It's temporary. Now he acknowledges it does bring pleasure, but it's temporary. It's striving after wind. You know, when you look at this type of stuff, I'll talk about ways that we can relate to this later, but in some ways you look at this and you go, man, I can't relate to that, you know, chasing after all those things. When you read that, some of the things you might think of is like major, major celebrities and movie stars. As I was reading it, I was thinking of something I heard about Johnny Depp the other day. I mean, obviously the guy's like outrageously wealthy. He's one of those I'm talking about that kind of starts to pursue madness, because once you hit the top, where do you go from there? There was some interview with him where they were asking him, and it was like tens of thousands of dollars a month on wine that they were asking him about, of like, hey, we've heard this bill. I mean, I want to say it was like $60,000-$70,000 a month just on wine consumption. And they ask it with this like incredulous, like, whoa, really? Are you actually spending it? He goes, oh no, that's much too low. It's way more than that. Wow. And all the other things that guy's been consumed with. You see, that's exactly what they're after too. I mean, they've kind of reached the limits of worldly pleasure, worldly knowledge, and where do they go from there? The answer is nowhere. Now, they may not conclude what Solomon did. They may just keep pursuing it to the day they die. But Solomon hit that and concluded, well, it's nothing more to do here. He didn't find the answer in that. And so that was the two great purposes of his pursuit, is more knowledge and more wisdom and pleasure. Physical gain, physical goods, physical prestige. Now, we could go throughout the entire book of Ecclesiastes and look at other ways, other conclusions that he's reached. But this is the section where we see basically his experimentation. What did he do to try and learn these lessons? And as we can tell, he did a lot of the wrong things. We're not going to talk about it, but we all know the end conclusion, right? He has all these wives, and they turn him away from God, who's the one that brought him all these things in the first place. But he did learn some lessons along the way. And I want to talk about two of those, and then finally we'll conclude with the various applications for us. The first conclusion that he reached is actually early on. Oftentimes the conclusions, as I said, some of the stuff he says, you're like, oh, is that really what he's concluding? Or is that just like a temporary conclusion until he reaches the final one? But I think one he reaches very early on in this book. And that's in chapter 3. Chapter 3, beginning in verse 1. For everything there is a season, and a time for every matter under heaven, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to pluck up what is planted, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to break down and a time to build up, a time to weep and a time to dance, a time to mourn and a time to, oh, I'm sorry, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones together, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to seek and a time to lose, a time to keep and a time to cast away, a time to tear and a time to sow, a time to keep silence and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace. This was one of his first great conclusions of this exploration that he went on. And contrast this with what we've just seen. What was he doing? He was trying to fill his life with the good things here, with laughter, with dancing, with embracing, with love, with peace. Those were the things that he was seeking after. But here's what he found. No matter how much he sought those things, no matter how much he tried to make those a part of his life always, what he found is that doesn't make it so. Just because you want to laugh all the time doesn't mean you will. Just because you want to have peace all the time doesn't mean that you will. Just because you don't want to lose things and lose time and lose things in your life doesn't mean that you won't. And so one of the things I believe he's telling us here is to accept that there's a time for all of these things. Now, I think personally, sometimes when I've read this, I've just kind of thought, I thought about it in this very passive way of kind of this idea that comes up later in the book of time and chance happen to everyone, and to what happens to the king also happens to the poor man, and what happens to the just happens to the unjust, and it's just coincidence, and Some of it is just happenstance, and some of it's intentional. And I've kind of looked at this of just all these things are going to happen, and we can't really control it. But what Solomon is saying is that's deliberate, and that's intentional. That if life were all about laughter, what would the point be? He pursued that, didn't he? If life were all about love and pleasure, and there never was time of war, or time to die, or time to mourn, he's saying it's no purpose. So one of the lessons for us is we need to recognize that there truly is a time for everything. And whatever we're going through at this time, whether good or bad, how are we responding to it? Are we accepting it? Are we acknowledging that this is the time for this particular thing? If we're mourning, rather than just trying to, oh, we've got to put a stop to this, we've got to leave, and we can't do that, instead ask the question, why is this the time for this? What can I learn from this time? As a side note, we had, I know I told you all several weeks ago, my boss's dad was really sick. He did pass away several weeks ago. A few of us went to the funeral, and one of my coworkers, as we were getting ready, we were all, you know, carpooling there, and she made reference to some other funeral. So where we were going, it was a Catholic funeral. It had the mass, and for those of you who are familiar with that, you know roughly what took place. And she was talking about, you know, before on the way there, you know, it being sad and all this. And she's like, you know, I prefer a funeral that's actually a celebration of life, that's actually happy, that's celebrating. You know, not that we should just get depressed and mourn and all of that, but she was missing what Solomon's saying here. And I don't want to just beat up her because I think we do the same thing sometimes. Sometimes we miss, there's a time for that. There's a time for mourning. We don't have to turn everything into a celebration. There's a time for mourning. So this was Solomon's first conclusion. And now let's turn to the second, or at least the final one. The second one I would like for us to talk about. And that is in chapter 12. Chapter 12. Beginning in verse 9. Besides being wise, the preacher also taught the people knowledge, weighing and studying and arranging many proverbs with great care. The preacher sought to find words of delight, and uprightly he wrote words of truth. The words of the wise are like goads, and like nails firmly fixed are the collected sayings. They are given by one shepherd. My son, be aware of anything beyond these. Of making many books there is no end, and much study is a weariness of the flesh. See, this kind of gets all the way back to that first pursuit. I'm just saying, writing these things and thinking about these things and pondering these things, it's a weariness of the flesh. But then he provides his conclusion. The end of the matter, all has been heard. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the duty, for this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment with every secret thing, whether good or evil. Now, all of us knew this at the end of the Ecclesiastes, and everyone probably knew this was going to be the final point of the sermon, and this is the idea that we go home with. There's a few more things I want to talk about, but this is the final passage that we're going to read. That is the conclusion. And he has pursued it all, and he's looked at it from all possible angles. And he's told us the conclusion, when all has been heard, is to fear God and keep his commandments. Why? Because he'll judge, ultimately. You see, we didn't read the story, but Solomon was known as a great judge as well. Remember, the first example of his wisdom was when those two women came forward arguing about a child. No, this one's mine. The other one would say, the child's actually mine. And we know the story there. So he was known as a great judge. And so he concludes that the purpose of all of this is to fear God and keep his commandments, because he, God, is the judge of all. Now, he's telling us this so we don't have to go through the same things that he did. He's telling his son this so we don't have to go through the same thing, so he didn't have to go through the same things he did. The book of Proverbs was written with the same intent, to tell his son, here's what I've learned. Here's what I have found. Here's the mistakes I've made. Here's the things to watch out for. And so the point of all of this is for us to not have to go there. Don't spend all of our time looking for knowledge. Don't spend all of our time trying to increase our wisdom even greater to the point of madness, because it just ends in sorrow. Don't spend all of our time looking for pleasure. Don't spend all of our time trying to deny the times where things for that rightly so need to be less enjoyable and trying to make them more pleasurable. Don't do any of that, because He has done it and serves as the example to us. So remember His conclusion. The greatest thing of all is to fear God and keep His commandments. But here's the question. Didn't He already know that? The wisest man on the face of the earth went through all these explorations. So as I just positioned it a minute ago, he learned it so we didn't have to. But here's the thing. Didn't he already know that? At the very beginning, before he ever was blessed with wisdom, that story that I read, do you think he already knew? Fear God and keep His commandments? Yeah. He knew it before any of this ever happened. Before he even began this exploration, before he ever even began this journey, he already knew the answer. He knew the greatest thing was to be humble before God. We saw him describe himself as a child before God. A child that was incapable without God. He knew that before any of this ever started. And so what happened? I believe he forgot. And when you think about it, I don't think he truly forgot. You know, thinking of David, the instance with Bathsheba when I believe it was Nathan came into him and told him, you know, thou art the man. And David, you know, reacted with sorrow because he knew it. I think if something similar had happened with Solomon, where somebody came to him in the middle of all this insanity and said, I've had a message from God, and it's to fear God and keep His commandments. Do you think Solomon would have just been shocked, never heard that before, never even thought about that before? No. And so when I say forget, I don't mean that it was actually just never known, or he heard this piece of information and then just forgot about it. So what do I mean when he said he forgot? He forgot in that he filled his life with distractions. He filled his life with all of these other things. All along, do you think he actually forgot about God? When someone came and talked to him about Yahweh, oh, that's right, yeah. I remember now. He came to me. He gave me this. He knew all along. But he didn't think about it because he was so busy thinking about other distractions. The most basic and simplistic building block. As I said at the very beginning, in verse 3 of chapter 2, he says, I wanted to see what was good for the children of man to do under heaven during the few days. That's ridiculous. He already knew. He knew what the children of man were supposed to be busy with. But he forgot because he was thinking about so many other things. And so this is the point of application for us. What I told you at the end, when we reached the end of the book, nobody, whoa, that's the end of Ecclesiastes. You knew it. You knew when, as soon as I got up here and started talking about Ecclesiastes, I know what the conclusion is. Fear God and keep His commandments. I've heard that one before. But look at your life. And I look at my life. Did you forget about that this week? Have you forgotten about that? Maybe even this morning? And when I say forgot about it, like Solomon, I don't mean like I remind you, hey, fear God and keep His commandments. Oh yeah, I forgot about that. No. I mean, what else is filling your life? You see, the things that I read, we can't relate to that in many ways. We don't have slaves, concubines, singers for us personally. We don't have great wealth and treasure of gold and silver. None of us are the wisest man or woman on the face of the earth. In fact, God already said that's not going to happen. He's going to be the wisest to come. Now, the other caveat, well, what about Jesus? I would assume he must not count as just a man. But we don't have any of those things. And so we can look at it and fail to relate. We can fail to recognize that we fall prey to the same trap. Here's a few different ways in which that happens. What have you been consumed with this week? What have you really been spending your time thinking about? What have you been spending your time on? Now, here's an example. Solomon may have had all of those things. Concubines, singers, gold and silver. But you know what he didn't have? He didn't have one of these. He didn't have the ability to sit on the throne for hours upon hours checking Facebook, checking Instagram, checking the news, worrying about all of those things, looking up the latest movies, watching stuff on YouTube. He didn't have that. And we do. And that's sometimes what consumes us. Or sports, or video games, reading, whatever the case may be. We can just as easily fill our lives with pleasure and distraction as Solomon did. And so let's not miss his point here. Let's not, I mean, there is a extent into which he took it to the furthest logical extreme, just like I mentioned about Johnny Depp, taking it to the furthest logical extreme. But the point is, you don't have to be there to have filled your life up with just as many distractions as those men. You can be there right now, distracted by other things. That is me, oftentimes. Not that I forget about God in the sense of, oh yeah, that got God, yeah, that's right. No, it's just, I may go hours thinking about something else. Hours worrying about something else. Hours pursuing something else. Which means I may as well have forgotten about God because he's not in my thought process. And so, in conclusion, I want us to really think about that. And I to really think about that. That we don't have to be Solomon. And really kind of what I'm saying, it's funny, you know, Solomon said it himself, there's nothing new under the sun. And so what I mentioned at the very beginning, constantly revisiting the book of Ecclesiastes, I always come away with something that I didn't have before. But in the end, it's like, well, is that really any different than what I already knew? Not really. But I think what I've talked about this time, for me at least, when I was thinking about it, was a little bit of a different thought process of how we can be the same as Solomon and what it means to truly forget. As I was preparing for this, I thought of, and this will be the final remark before the invitation, I thought about this book that I'd read, and there was a character within it that had this philosophy, and that person believed that we're born knowing everything, and then we spend the rest of our life forgetting it. Now, obviously that's not true, and even in the book it's this person's theory. But here's the way in which that is true for us. We're born again knowing everything. When we're born again, as a Christian, we know everything we need to know. That's it. Now, we may learn nuance and how to behave and this and that, but in terms of what matters, when we're born again, we know it. And yet some of us spend the rest of our lives forgetting that fact. Forgetting that God saved us way back then. Forgetting that God's grace cleansed us way back then. Forgetting that all we have to do now is the same terms that we open with Solomon. Walk in his ways. We spend our life forgetting that. And we spend our life trying to fill it with other things. Trying to understand this or that better. Now, I'm not trying to say don't try and understand God's word. That's not the point at all. But as you're trying to understand life in God's word, if you're a Christian, just remember that when you were born again, you know everything that you need to know. Because the greatest knowledge of all is that Jesus died on the cross for our sins, and our response should be to humble ourselves, to confess who he is, to repent of our sins, and to give our life over to him. If you've done that, stick with that and feel confident knowing you know what you need to know. And for those of us that have not done that, do that. And for those of us who have done that and have forgotten what it means, remember. And remember that this is what life is about. Fear God and keep his commandments. He'll bring every deed, great or small, into judgment. If there's anything we can do to help you in responding to that, then come as we stand and sing together.